Hello, and welcome to the Business Facilities Podcast, where we're focused on discussing strategies to help business owners and site selection consultants make the best location decisions for companies. I'm Ann Cosgrove, Editorial Director of Business Facilities Magazine, and today's episode of the Business Facilities Podcast is brought to you by Live Exchange Emerging Industries, taking place October 4th through 6, 2023 in Columbus, Ohio. Today, I'll be speaking with Mike Grella, CEO and founder of Grella Partnership Strategies, and Carl Nelson, Managing Principal of Infrastructure Ready. Led by Mike, Grella Partnership Strategies is a firm with expertise in data center, e-commerce, and industrial real estate site selection, acquisition, infrastructure development, smart cities, and economic development strategy, representing projects and initiatives throughout the U.S. and in over 25 countries. Carl's firm, Infrastructure Ready, is a location economics, site selection, and commercial real estate development firm. Carl is a real estate development specialist and has orchestrated over $5 billion in industrial real estate transactions over the course of his 20-year career. Mike and Carl will be presenting the general session at Live Exchange Emerging Industries on site selection for emerging industries in Columbus, Ohio on October 6, 2023. So stay tuned for more information about Live Exchange Emerging Industries during this podcast. So I'd like to welcome Mike and Carl. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me today.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for having us.
I just wanted to kick off this topic with asking you to weigh in with your experiences on high growth tech-centric industry. It's a big driver of the economy in 2023, as it was in 2022, with a lot of momentum. Advanced manufacturing as a whole, along with the proliferation of EV, semiconductors, data centers, to name a few, it's been changing the site selection outlook and process. So I wanted to ask both of you, from a high level or the 30,000 foot view, what do you see as one of the biggest impacts of these high growth industries on site selection and on economic development? What do you see going on out there in your work?
Well, I can certainly start with that, Ann. Appreciate the introduction. And I know between Mike and myself, we collaborate on a number of projects across the country at any given time, and I've done so since we both worked together at a little boutique out in Seattle about 5 years ago. You know, from my perspective, which is I think a little bit more of the infrastructure side, and certainly the side of the business that is we'll call it the dirt side, for lack of a better term. Is what we see is a lot of projects in these spaces, whether it be data centers or R&D or advanced manufacturing, where traditional site selection is really revolved around essentially what amounts to your kind of your core competency of your site, your facilities, and then of course, you know, whatever widget was being produced at the time or manufactured or transmitted, I guess I should say, given that we're in the data center space. But you know, what we've seen certainly from the infrastructure side and from the development, overall development side, a lot of these projects from that more technical physical side is now this interwoven concept of large scale infrastructure projects that are not just necessary, but a really critical path in many cases towards the building and deploying of these types of facilities. And when I talk about critical path, we're talking about looking at, you know, grid considerations, for example, power grid considerations, upstream, what new transformers, long lead type items are going to need to be ordered. We're looking at things like, you know, population over a 10 to 15 year horizon, because we know that some of these facilities will have OEMs that also are going to locate their base and produce support elements or materials for whatever the site deployment is going to need. And what that means is we're looking at that longevity, or I guess I should call it the the resource longevity over a period of time and look around those corners. So I think it's from my perspective, it's certainly that infrastructure component and how you're having to interweave some very technical items into the conversation that, you know, prior to it was more kind of your site development and other components.
Yeah. You had mentioned at the 30,000 foot level, and 100% agree with Carl. It's looking at, you know, instead of just looking at power of where's the closest substation, you're now looking at a grid level, and you're looking at what is the capacity in the region. You're looking at, you know, resiliency factors. You're looking at climate change and disaster risk, and how will, you know, resources, whether it be, you know, water, power, renewable energy, labor, et cetera. You have to look at that through that 20, 30 year lens and not just I'm solving for it tomorrow. Mm. The time to target and scalability is really driving everything in emerging industries right now.
What was that? The time to target scalability?
Time to target and scalability. How quickly can you deploy and how quickly and easily can you scale without constraint? Are really driving factors. So it's not just, can I build a factory here that's 1 million square feet? Could I expand to 2 or 3 million square feet? And again, as Carl mentioned, what about my entire supply chain and having that situational awareness that, you know, it's not just my CapEx and my jobs and my what my power demands are. It's everybody within the ecosystem. So looking at it from an ecosystem perspective, and you know, we've only touched on it a bit so far, but really, obviously, labor is a super important component, but it also depends on the type of emerging industry. So, for example, a indoor or vertical farm might not, or a data center might not have the same labor requirements as a chip fabrication facility or EV or battery manufacturing. So technical labor is absolutely important, but you have to look at this specific category of industry to identify what those particular labor and workforce needs are. But from a infrastructure perspective, that's really the commonality in emerging industries, is looking at things at a macro level, a grid level, an MSA level, and then projecting out 15, 20, 30 years into the future.
Great, thank you. Yes, as Carl had mentioned, resource longevity, which I haven't heard of, and that makes, that's a good way to frame it, I think, in that macro level. So thank you for that, both of you. So then I wanted to expand a little bit and to ask you about how Grella Partnership Strategies and Infrastructure Ready, your firms, how do you work together? How have you worked together? And how have you worked within the space, this space of site selection, these emerging industries that we're talking about with these new, and evolving needs? How do you work together? And what is your client profile in that sense? What types of services do you provide them?
Sure. Carl, do you want to start? Carl is the technical site selection, due diligence, get your hands dirty, let you know whether or not this site, this city, this region is going to work. That's his expertise. So I'll turn it over to Carl.
Yeah, no, thanks, Mike. I think, you know, we do often collaborate. And candidly, you know, the economic development space and the physical real estate development space overlap quite a bit, as you might imagine. But we work for a wide variety and have engaged together with a wide variety of clients, all the way from end users looking for sites to municipalities looking to attract sites to utilities, trying to understand some various needs and kind of everything in between, and maybe even some outliers here and there. And so I think everything is custom designed we are in the business of large scale infrastructure problem solving, and that amounts to you know, first and foremost, really hearing what our clients need or perceive to need, and then you know, diving deep to really understand what that looks like or what that could look like, and trying to develop a programmatic response and roadmap for execution to how we can go from where we are today to obviously, you know, meet the goals that those various clients have. And I'll caveat that with the majority of, if not all of our main clients, because we consider it to be our main expertise, it tends to be the data center business. But obviously we talk to a number of folks that have large scale infrastructure challenges that need to be addressed, and certainly we'll take on projects only if we feel like we can add value. So
yeah, that's a great point, Carl. And when we've done collaborated on quite a few studies for economic development agencies and utilities, where they've come in and said, look at our service territory, look at our market, tell us what we have, tell us what our shortcomings are, how are we attractive from a regional perspective or from a utility perspective. And we will review sites. So Carl will focus on, he'll look at the topography of a site, he'll look at the risk factors, he'll look at power, water, wastewater, fiber connectivity, scalability, et cetera, access to resources. And we've got another partner that we collaborate that does very in-depth workforce and labor analytics using AI and really cutting edge, one of the top data analysts in the world. So I want to give him credit. And then on my end, I do a lot of the land use, zoning, entitlement, stakeholder engagement, community engagement, which is becoming a bigger and bigger piece of these projects. NIMBY is no longer just a matter of neighbors complaining about smokestacks or neighbors complaining about traffic. With emerging industries, it's communities that are concerned that you're going to use up all of our water. They're concerned that you're going to use up all of our power. For data centers and some of the advanced manufacturing, they want to know what's the fuel mix of your power. Are you going to enter into a renewable power purchase agreement to offset the carbon footprint of all the electricity that you're using? And so, notwithstanding that data centers and many of these advanced manufacturing projects are among the most environmentally conscious and energy efficient projects in the world, they're still huge power users and in a lot of cases, huge water users. Mm-hmm. And so to have that mindfulness when we're engaging with stakeholders and doing that due diligence and understanding from the community's perspective, having that emotional intelligence of walking into a community, already knowing, doing that advanced work of watching the planning board meetings for the last 6 months, looking at the public meetings with the city manager and city council and the mayor, et cetera, and understanding those concerns, even going on social media, reading local news and scraping articles through search engines and other social media channels. So you walk in there with a pretty good idea of what the concerns are. And that's part of that transformation with mega projects, is that it's not just, here's my economic impact study, I'm going to generate a bunch of tax revenue, when can we start building? You have to bring a sense of humility with these projects. They are awesome projects. In a lot of cases, you're using renewable energy and it's cutting edge technology, and they're resilient jobs that pay six figures. But communities want more than that. And that's the piece that I really hone in on. There's an important element that I don't think that necessarily is being done writ large by the site selection and economic development community, is when you talk about a chip manufacturer, if you talk about a data center campus, that how do these how do these technologies translate into everyday lives and conveniences and quality of life and longevity and public safety and security, et cetera? You know, the artificial intelligence and machine learning and Internet of Things, whether it be like cameras and surveillance, whether it be smart solutions and of where to deploy law enforcement resources, smart lighting, et cetera. These are all being driven by technology. They're being driven by microchips. And so it's extremely important for us as folks in the industry to be able to successfully articulate that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So then we touched on this a bit in the first question, but I wanted to ask you some specifics, examples perhaps, or just maybe recurring questions you receive in this landscape when it comes to the site selection process when you're working with your clients and the other stakeholders. What questions or even just one recurring question maybe are companies in these sectors asking you at the outset and even throughout the process? That may be kind of, like I said, recurring or maybe new in this realm that we're in now. And have you seen a shift in priorities of the site and location factors when compared to more traditional businesses? I know we did touch on that a little bit in the first, but I thought maybe I wanted to bring to the forefront something you know, those one or two questions or concerns you're really seeing over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can speak to the physical sites themselves. I mean, you are almost always, and I would expect the audience would expect to get questions about, you know, what the challenges are going to be for site development, whether it be regulatory, whether it be entitlement wise, whether it be the physical site itself. Those types of questions are sort of always front and center. And typically come before you've even discussed the market. So it's a little bit of cart before the horse in some instances there. But from my perspective, and certainly my experience, the success question or the challenges to success has morphed into more, how are we not only successful here, but how do we thrive and how do we engage in a way that's going to be meaningful, less of a us versus them type of footing and more of a how do we deploy whatever facility? It could be a data center, it could be a chip manufacturer, but how do we deploy that in a way that's going to not just meet our needs, but continue to engage with the community and give them some, the overall community a sense of, true engagement and giving something back. That's been something I've seen change over the years, which I think is, very healthy and very positive for in terms of continued growth in this industry.
Yeah, I would add to that. Frankly, there's a shortage of scalable, infrastructure-ready, powered sites that are available for these very, very large investments for battery, EV manufacturing, chip manufacturing, where if you go in and say, well, I don't want to pay taxes for 30 years, and they'll say, all right, great, then we'll speak to these three other projects that are interested in this site that are willing to pay taxes. And I also think that that's a short-sighted perspective to aggressively pursue incentives. I look at it from the perspective of, for a data center where you've got, you don't have a big strain other than on power. If you've got available power, if you're not creating a ton of traffic, if you're not putting a lot of butts in seats in schools, and you don't have to hire police and fire and teachers and road repairs, et cetera, then you look at the externalities and you say, okay, well, maybe providing an incentive makes sense. But if you're talking about a project where you're going to have to expand the sewer system, you're building new substations, you're extending transmission and distribution power lines, those cost millions and tens of millions of dollars. And there's an awareness that companies and their advisors need to have about, you want to have a resilient community, which means having a tax base that can pay for these externalities that you might, we need to build an access road. We may need to expand the highway. You're going to be creating a regional ecosystem with thousands of jobs for an EV plant or a chip fab facility that's going to have dozens of suppliers locating nearby. And so that doesn't mean that there aren't tax breaks or ways that can be supported. But frankly, on the projects that we work on, the public-private partnerships that we are most successful in forging are really ones that are focused on two things, infrastructure and talent. It's not about getting a check. I want $500 million of cash if this project's going to come here. It's how do you solve my talent pipeline problem, my diverse talent pipeline challenge over the next 10, 20 years? And successful partnerships with community and technical colleges, with four-year universities, partnering with HBCUs, partnering with workforce boards, WIBs, et cetera. And then on the infrastructure side, again, the engineering teams are sitting down with the utilities and saying, okay, you know, and talking with the ISOs and the grid operators about, hey, we're going to need 300 megawatts of power in 3 years, and we think we're going to scale to a gigawatt. And in some of these large advanced manufacturing projects where there's going to be dozens of suppliers, you're talking about multiple gigawatts. And so those are very complex engineering problems that need to be solved and infrastructure issues. So that I think is extreme. Those are the questions that need to be answered and solved. And certainly I'm not anti-incentive by any means, but I think that you need to have this consciousness about where do you want government support to be deployed that's really going to create a resilient economy, a resilient region, and resilient business. And that really comes to having, you know, infrastructure, water, wastewater, broadband, fiber, and then that and talent, renewable energy, et cetera. And that's where you see the focus.
This episode of the Business Facilities Podcast is brought to you by Live Exchange Emerging Industries. Taking place October 4th through 6th in Columbus, Ohio, Live Exchange connects site selectors and economic developers for 2.5 days of education and networking. Pre-scheduled one-on-one meetings, an executive conference program, and multiple networking events make Live Exchange a can't-miss event for corporate site selectors and location advisors. To learn more and find out how you can participate, visit bfliveexchange.com after this podcast. Okay, so Mike and Carl, let's build on that a little bit. And I wanted to, let's get a little more specific. I wanted to ask you if you could share a story of a corporate relocation or expansion project that you've worked on separately or together in this emerging industry space we're talking about that was a success in terms of how the location was able to meet that company's needs. We've talked a lot about what companies want, what communities want, what economic developers are offering. So I just wanted to ask you if either of you could, you know, talk about a project or two where you saw success and maybe what contributed to that.
Sure. I mean, one of the first projects that comes to mind is one that Mike and I actually worked on together, which was launching a Fortune 10 company in Columbus, Ohio, on the data center side. And that was the first foray really into the certainly into the Columbus area, but for large scale infrastructure, tech, data center facilities. And it had a number of twists and turns with it, and was a, you know, it was a solid 2 to 3 year process to go from strategy to tactical. And I think, you know, some of the lessons learned, and these were the early days, 2014, 2015, I guess everything by in today's world is early days for data centers, but was marked with certainly some apprehension as to what are these things, what exactly are these big boxes that have, you know, these black fences in front of them and high security and cameras, and nobody really talks about what's going on inside them. As my mom would call it, isn't the cloud in the cloud? And you say, no, they're in bricks and mortar building, mom. But the reality was, I think we we had to come up with a plan to deploy multiple campus facilities across a city. And in fact, in one case, walked away from one township, but in a way that was going to be both engaging with the community, but also sensitive to the various needs that that were going to come up as part of a project like that. And we're talking, you know, billions of dollars of investment going in, but also the flexibility. And I think this gets back to some of the things Mike said before, the flexibility of the engineering teams and the design teams to understand that, you know, certain aesthetics were going to be required, and certainly certain engineering around how to cool things, how to power things, so that you know, resources were conserved, and you know, you had the ability to be good stewards of not just, you know, the local environment, the regional environment, but of the business and of the continued expansion of the business, which has continued to happen to this day. So that's the first project that comes to mind for me. Mike, I know you've got some other ideas of some projects, but that was a success in terms of we deployed well. They continue to deploy well to this day, meaning other campus type deployments. And what we've seen happen, and I think this is generally speaking is true across the board, whether it be, you know, R&D or any heavy infrastructure resource. Once the ecosystems start being built, you start seeing a lot of co-location of other types of facilities that rely on that infrastructure across the board. And that certainly happened in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great example. You know, there was a lot of education. I think the lessons learned in terms of that being an emerging industry site selection project was two points that I recall. One was crafting regulations and crafting agreements for a new type of industry that they had not attracted before. So we actually had paid for, you know, contract permitting folks to help entitle the project and get and speed up the project, because there were a lot of complexities with these projects that they didn't have the bandwidth or the sophistication to really support. So we offered to say, look, you know, you hire them, you train them, they're, you know, fiduciary responsibility is to you, we will pay for them and give you that bandwidth so that you can help support our project. And so that was, you know, one aspect. The other one was, you know, from a land use and zoning perspective, in some cases, folks weren't sure, like, hey, this is industrial, but is data center commercial? Is it manufacturing? What is it? You know, having that understanding about, you know, what's the right way to entitle a project and, you know, crafting the incentives, and then also dealing with the community engagement. Just one other quick example of a successful project was working in an area that had a finite amount of available water, and engineering with a data center provider that came up with a low no water solution, so that the demand on the water system was going to be significantly less than their original architecture and engineering plans. And so instead of saying to the community, well, you need to figure out how to get X gallons a day of water or this project isn't coming, it was, hey, let's challenge our technical teams to come up with a solution so that we can go to this community and this, you know, this site that we think is a great site, where the only shortcoming was a constraint on future water supply, and then successfully being able to architect so that you wouldn't be a strain on that supply.
So that company invested its own time and resources into a solution in that case.
Exactly. Instead of putting the burden on the community, challenging itself.
That's great. So we can close out with, you know, I wanted to ask you, where do you see opportunity for improved outcomes when it comes to site selection? You know, what do you see as, you know, whether it's a kind of a broad thing you would you know, like to see happen, or something small, even finite, or something you've started to put into your projects? Just what do you see as being able to kind of strategies to be able to make these types of projects more successful for everyone on, you know, every side of the table? What are some of your observations there?
Yeah, I would say the community, you know, the community engagement piece is extremely important, and understanding on the front end that the resources, understanding what those resource constraints are well in advance. You don't want to get into, you don't want to be walking down the aisle and then find out as you're doing your vows that it's not till death do us part, it's till we run out of power, which is going to be in about 2 years, or we won't have power for 4 years, or we can only deliver 50 megawatts and you need 500. And so we ask those clarifying questions early on to make sure that you know, we're going to be able to successfully scale and be able to locate and be resilient and successful. And we'll probably need to be using the word resiliency more often, because that's really a key word and a key driver for all these projects is, you know, from a supply chain perspective, from a power perspective, from a security and cybersecurity perspective, is how to ensure scalability and resilience. And so a lot of that is, again, just understanding the resources that are available, and then getting creative in how to architect solutions around that.
Yeah, I can't say much more than what Mike said. I candidly took the air out of the room with that one. You know, at the end of the day, you know, communication always improves outcomes, over communication, and certainly, you know, looking long term and understanding, you know, what that looks like, or being able to make reasonable, logical assumptions about what you know that future looks like while you're engaging. It's always going to be helpful in some capacity or another, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Mike. And thank you, Carl, for your time and for sharing your experiences and for your insights today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And we look forward to hearing more from you at Live Exchange in Columbus on October 6th on this topic. And to our listeners, for more information about participating in Live Exchange Emerging Industries, visit bflivexchange.com and stay tuned for the next episode of the Business Facilities Podcast.